Carrie Kind, and I'm the editor of In the Moment, the personal narrative section of Academic Pediatrics. In this forum, we share your stories, your experiences with patients or experiences being a patient, the influence of mentors, the impact of policy and societal events, and the relationship of the author's work in pediatrics to their lives and the lives of others. These narratives allow the reader, or here the listener, to make connections to larger themes through the story itself.
Hello, this is Ruchi Kaushik, and this story is entitled Heart to Heart. The first time I spoke with Vijay's mother, the family was planning a trip the following day to meet friends and celebrate the blessing of a newly built temple. They needed a portable oxygen concentrator for the airplane, and a letter to the airline allowing them to carry oxygen in flight. I asked if Vijay was excited about this trip, and his mother's voice sang of pride as she detailed his dedication to spirituality. Vijay was a 12-year-old boy born with a hypoplastic left ventricle, and his family had recently been told he had no further surgical options to palliate his heart, including a cardiac transplant. As a fellow Hindu, I immediately recognized the significance of this Tirthayatra, or pilgrimage, in his journey to attain moksha, or the liberation of the soul from the cycle of rebirth and reincarnation. After completing a palliative care fellowship last summer, I accepted a position as a consultative complex and palliative care pediatrician in a virtual first comprehensive care program for children and youth with special healthcare needs. We partner with managed care Medicaid plans to support, not replace, medical homes for eligible children and youth with complex medical, developmental, behavioral, and social needs. We provide these statewide services via telehealth. Vijay was assigned to my patient panel. I reviewed his medical records prior to video calling Vijay's mother and quickly noticed the family lived in the city from which I had just moved after having lived there for 9 years. I was delighted to learn that he attended the middle school my three daughters had attended. He sought healthcare services in a hospital I knew well. His primary care pediatrician is my friend. I immediately felt connected to this family and wanted to use my knowledge of his community to help them access the care he so deeply needed. I began by calling his pediatrician, who was able to find orders his cardiologist signed for a concentrator in the electronic health record. Acutely aware that primary care practices are often overwhelmed by numerous care coordination tasks and ill-equipped with sufficient resources to address them, I recognized how I could support this clinic. I asked Vijay's pod care team assistant to communicate with the durable medical equipment vendor who agreed to expedite delivery, given the travel date. I printed a letter template from the airline's website, signed, uploaded to our app, and sent it to Vijay's mother along with a digital message to expect a delivery. We'd also agreed to meet by video visit after their return. The second time I spoke with Vijay's mother was after an emergency department visit. He was out of sildenafil and his oxygen saturations were falling. Vijay's mother called our pod nurse, and she convinced her to take him to the emergency department, though he had repeatedly told his mother in the past he preferred not to go. In the ED, he was given a dose of sildenafil. His oxygen saturations returned to baseline, and he was sent home the same night. Before engaging in a video visit with the family, I called his primary cardiologist to better understand his prognosis. Apparently, with consistent medication adherence, he could potentially survive another 5 to 10 years. Without medications, he would survive for days. The cardiologist divulged that they had not yet informed the family of this. I joined a video visit with Vijay's mother, hoping to finally meet the Vijay about whom every other team member had been raving. The nurses, social workers, and community health navigators on my team tell me he smiled fully in every encounter. He never complained, even when dyspneic. His mother echoed this when she told me he suffered greatly, but only she could perceive the intensity of his suffering. Nevertheless, he insisted on attending school. He adored his little sister. He inspired his parents to embrace gratitude. He was profoundly spiritual and a talented artist. He discovered solace in his illustrations of the many avatars or avatars of God. Art became his refuge, a sanctuary where he transcended the challenges of his condition and found inner peace. I did not meet him. His mother was alone on the screen. I learned that Vijay did not know the details of his diagnosis, treatment options, or prognosis. He only knew that his heart was not normal. Culturally, parental withholding of this information to protect children is not uncommon. I suspected he also did not know that his wishes, what mattered most to him and how he wanted to spend his time, were valuable and integral to the conversation. His mother was protecting him, perhaps not realizing the many-fold benefits of telling him. I innately understood this. Leaning in toward the screen with intentional eye contact and softening my tone, I asked her for permission to discuss his prognosis and the concept of palliative care. She listened openly and with interest. I knew the family had limited access to palliative care services in their city. And so, in a heartbeat, I became this tween's virtual palliative care pediatrician, and he became my first virtual palliative care patient. After a dedicated and deliberate goals of care conversation with Vijay's mother, she agreed to have her son join the next visit so I could help her talk to him about his diagnosis and explore his wishes. When I decided to step into this position, I was admittedly concerned about how I would deliver palliative care via telehealth. Throughout the last 10 years of caring for children with medical complexity in person, I've walked journeys with numerous families, celebrating their child's achievements and holding their hands, both metaphorically and literally, in the face of tragedy. I've learned to read fear, uncertainty, and confusion in their eyes. I've experienced goosebumps from the palpable joy aglow when they engage and thrive in their communities. I've wept beside them and held them closely. Human touch is a powerful healer. I wonder if these families know I need this connection, perhaps as much as they need me. Every parent has a dream for their child. These dreams don't vanish upon the diagnosis of a life-limiting condition, but rather they evolve. As the parent of a child with a chronic condition, the nurturing realization of these developmentally adapted dreams is meaningful to my heart. Prioritizing death with dignity and developing deep relationships on a spiritual level with these families while attending to cultural traditions is truly my life's purpose. Could I possibly develop this connection through a screen? My final video visit with Vijay and his family was through his mother's phone in the pediatric intensive care unit. Vijay's Medicaid lapsed. Our community health navigator had rushed to assist the family in reapplying, and I had written a letter in support of expediting its approval. Though his mother approached us early enough for our pharmacist to arrange for low-cost sildenafil, she called us 4 days after no furosemide, when he had become too edematous for us to manage his care at home. My team members wondered why she had waited 4 days to notify us. I wondered if his protracted suffering had become unbearable for her. In the hospital, he began to exhibit altered mental status and was found on imaging to have several cerebrovascular accidents, one that had bled. Vijay's mother notified his nurse via our app and asked to speak with me. I saw her face and my heart fell. No differently from how it fell during the catastrophes I had endured with families in person before. And I met Vijay lying peacefully cyanotic in his hospital. The pediatric intensive care unit physician reviewed the images and prognosis with his parents. In response, Vijay's father uttered, "God is good." My intuition was perhaps correct. His parents believed he had suffered enough to achieve moksha. I proceeded to meet the family via numerous virtual visits throughout the weekend, and our navigator, based in the family's city, arrived at the hospital. His mother asserted that Vijay wanted nothing more than to be at home, surrounded by family and friends, singing spiritual music. This, to Hindus, signifies a good death. The hospice agency staff arranged for transportation and met the family at home. Vijay died 5 hours later in his bed, in his room, in the way he wished, with friends and family chanting religious hymns. 1 month after his death, I visited Vijay's mother in the city I had recently called home. We embraced at once. We laughed, we cried, and we spoke about Vijay at length. In Hinduism, the divine is depicted with blue skin. Vijay's mother has and will always refer to him as her divine child. She confided in me that while she had met numerous physicians throughout Vijay's medical care, I instantly felt familiar to her. I cannot discern if our shared city of residence, nationality, or religion fostered this familiarity. I suspect a combination of the three united us wholly. The screen between Vijay's mother and me that I believed may have presented a barrier to delivering compassionate, culturally competent pediatric palliative care was simply not the issue. The absence of access to local palliative services was. I discovered that touching the lives and hearts of our patients and families may not require a physical presence, but necessarily an emotional and compassionate presence. I was afforded the same poignant reward in delivering palliative care, both in my faith and in my profession, regardless of the method of delivery. My only hope is that I was able to touch Vijay's heart in the way that he touched mine.
Thank you to our authors for sharing. A note to listeners that In the Moment publishes narratives where either patient or family permission has been obtained, or with a notation that minor details have been modified to aid in protecting patient privacy. Thank you for listening.